Hey everyone, welcome to the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riders from the inside out. Changing our perspective on how we work with our horses is the point of the podcast. I am Kirsten Nelson, a professional horse trainer, and with me is Deb Romero, certified Alexander Technique instructor. And today's topic is a continuation of Newton's laws of motion. We're going to talk about the third law of motion today and how it applies to our bodies and what happens also when we ride. So Newton's third law of motion is kind of catchphrased as, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. It's when two objects interact that they apply forces on each other that are equal in magnitude, but opposite in direction. So it's also called the action reaction, and that forces always come in pairs. So anytime we think of a force, one of the laws of motion is that forces come in dualistic directions or dualistic forces. It have to be that are actually equal in magnitude. And so how we find balance is equalizing forces in multiple directions. So for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Then we can talk about external forces, which could be direct contact forces, or even what they call action at a distance, which would be sort of gravity, electrical forces, magnetic forces, what physics describes and what Newton's law of motion helps us understand is just the reality of this interplay, these interaction of forces as we move around our physical world. There's always an interplay of forces. So the third law of motion is how forces act on each other specifically. So anything you want to add to that, Deb?
Well, that's really important because we're working with a huge force.
What do you mean a huge force?
The horse is a magnitude of force.
A huge mass.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't know if a lot of people think about it that way when they're interacting. And I really like the part about the acting on a distance. So even electrical, and I kind of consider us electrically wound, you know, typed on the inside. Our heart goes electrically to beat, and how all of that energy, managed or not managed, affects our relationship with our horse.
Absolutely. No, and we have, as living bodies, as do horses, an electrical system, mm-hmm. a fluid system, and then we have sort of the mechanical system of this interplay of forces, which goes directly to Newton's third law, of how our muscles and bones, or soft tissues and hard tissues, interact to generate force, which always has magnitude and direction. Right. So we can look at Newton's third law of motion just internally with the various right. parts of our body and how they interact with opposing directions of force. Or we can look at the whole body interacting with another body. Right. So two bodies in motion, a horse and rider, over sort of the action at a distance forces of gravity, is this huge interplay of forces that always have direction and magnitude. So when we talk about balance, balance is a static equilibrium of between opposing forces.
Say that again. It's a
balance is an equalized amount of force in directly opposing directions, right? So it's a static equilibrium. That's why balance feels still. We recognize it as ease and stillness, even during motion, because it's an equalization of forces, whether we're talking internal or external or even at a distance. We're working with all of those forces all the time.
Yeah, I think that's the language and the way we interpret it, because when people hear the word static, they may think of no motion.
Which is what it feels like.
Yeah,
but even while you're in motion.
Yeah, I think that's key, is that when I don't know, let's take the example, say you give the instruction to somebody, balance on one foot.
Mm. Little sidebar, is how they can actually tell your age very accurately, is how well you balance on one foot.
Oh, yeah. And for a certain length of time or something, mm-hmm. one of my clients told me. Mm-hmm. But if we think of it as I've got to be still, when people think that way, they tend to lock everything.
Right. Because our first reaction when somebody says be still is a muscular contraction, trying to manage force.
It's a shortened contraction.
Right.
Which locks our joints, which you can't balance.
That's why if we think of balance as static equilibrium, what that means is we find the stillness or the stability.
Ooh, I like that.
In a moving relationship of forces.
Oh, I like that. Yes.
That's
stable
really
in motion. That's what that sounds better to me.
Yeah. So it's not like, and balance is only a momentary point of stability, which is always changing because the world is spinning, gravity's changing. We could look at wind force, we could look at wave force, we could look at all these external forces. Nothing on our planet is ever fully static. So balance is always managing forces in order to equalize these opposing forces. So only in the static equilibrium, which is a momentary point of balance, do we find the stability, or that's what balance is. It's stability within all these different directions and forces of motion.
And sometimes I hear it described by people, I think you use the word easy. It just, there's less effort when you find that sweet spot or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly. And that's what Newton's third law of motion actually explains to us, is that sweet spot and that stillness, that quietness, that lack of effort, that amount of ease that we all recognize is balanced forces, opposing forces that are equalized. Right? So we have a left side and a right side. If I have too much lateral bending in my spine, right? If I bend my lateral spine on the left side, my muscles instantly contract on the right side. Right? So that's the relationship of bone to muscle. Now, why do my muscles contract on the right side if I laterally bend my spine to the left? Because gravity is always working.
Yes.
Right? Gravity is always working as a force of nature. So my body's relationship to gravity, if I make my body asymmetrical with too much mass to the left, my muscles contract on the right so that I don't fall.
Right.
In order to resist gravity.
The brain's first responsibility is to maintain vertical before it does anything else.
Or to just, we could even say with a horse, a quadruped, to not fall over.
Don't fall over.
So stability is a primary requirement of a body. We Yes. can't function without stability, right? And that's actually when we age or if we're injured, as we lose our stability, it's very frightening.
Yeah, the central nervous system will let you know.
Oh yeah. We go on high alert, which is the same reason when we're riding a horse, if the horse makes a sudden change of direction, we experience inertia, we become unstable, that triggers our fear, right? The fear of falling is a very deep seated fear in our psyche. So as soon as we become unstable, the threat of falling increases in our central nervous system, and our body kicks in automatically to stabilize our relationship over gravity. Right? We could be on a boat, on a horse, walking around, going up and down a mountain, going on a tightrope or a balance beam. That function of our body trying to find stability over gravity is just always a given.
Yes.
Right? So we can do it with equalized opposing forces, sort of like if I bend left and contract the muscles on the right side of my back, or the whole right side of my body actually contracts because I have too much mass towards gravity on the left, my whole right side muscularly with my soft tissue is going to pull upward.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, that it's not just in your back. It's muscles in your leg, feet,
neck,
mm-hmm. arm. It affects the entire body at some level. Yeah, it's never one spot.
Right. So as my mass, if my mass tips too far forward, all the muscles on the opposite side are going to increase tension to prevent me from falling forward. Right. That's how, if we look at the internal action reaction, Newton's third law of motion, where our bones go in relationship to gravity, which is a constant force, constant 24/7, never shuts down, never changes, always works. Right. So our moving body's relationship to gravity is the alignment of our skeleton to that vertical force.
Yes.
Right. And then our soft tissues will adjust depending on our skeletal relationship to gravity. So in other words, if I lean too far back, then all the muscles on the front part of my body are going to move in an opposing direction to my bones in order to stabilize my body.
Yes.
That's the internal action reaction play of force between soft tissue and bone. So when working with a rider, once we get on a horse, we're sort of traditionally trained, sit in the middle of the saddle and put equal weight on your seat bones, equal weight in the stirrups, and hold your hands still. And I go, but you're on a moving force, right? If you tried to do that straddling a barrel on a boat, it wouldn't make any sense. So that instruction as a static posture in order to find your balance doesn't encourage our brains to find that equilibrium of forces. So all riders end up excessively contracting in the muscles, either in their legs or their upper back or their lower back, or they collapse their skeletal relationship to gravity. And then all of the muscles in our body are creating an opposing force, right? So if we jam our heels down and we have a forward force through our legs, lower legs, and an inward force with our thighs, then that force is felt by the horse, who has to then react to the forces generated in our body, and we're both dealing with gravity. So when I work with riders, the first thing we look for is, how do you equalize in three dimensions? So we have a lateral left-right plane, we have a vertical up-down plane, and we have a horizontal front-back plane, that each plane has to be equalized to find balance. So if we're too far left, we tilt the lateral plane, which makes us contract muscularly. If our skeleton moves to the low side, our muscles contract on the high side, or vice versa, right? So same thing if we think in the forward to back plane. So for the human body, the lateral and horizontal planes are pretty interchangeable, because if we exaggerate any one of our natural curves in our spine, then we throw off that horizontal equilibrium. So in other words, we have a natural curve in our thoracic spine, right? The kyphotic curve sort of goes backwards. Mm-hmm. And then the lumbar curve or the lordotic curve goes a little bit forward in our body. So if we round our upper back excessively, or if we hollow our lower back excessively, those excessive curves horizontally through our spine throw off our vertical alignment with gravity.
And so just think how that affects your horse. If you maintain that posture, because I would say most riders that I work with, they're posturing on their horse. They're also doing at some level on the ground, walking, talking, just being a human on the ground.
Exactly. So even if we just do it in our bodies, as we increase the degree of flexion or extension through our spine, so if we want to round our back, our weight is going to shift backwards and our muscles are going to contract upward at the front of our legs. They're going to contract at the front part of our body, right? So that direction of force then is going backwards and not forwards, but we're stabilizing over gravity. We're stabilizing, but not balanced.
Exactly. And sometimes people don't even realize that.
Right. Because a body will just find stability unconsciously.
Yes. Whether it's good or bad.
Right. So balance is really the optimal alignment of our mechanical body with gravity, because we're equalizing through, say, the most ideal functional control of our spine, our head, our spine, our pelvis. That's how we use mechanics to equalize forces, right? As the forces are equalized, we feel the ease of equalizing those forces because we're not spending extra muscular effort trying to stabilize our body over gravity. The alignment, right. The alignment itself of the skeleton over gravity is what equalizes the forces and the relationship to gravity. And that's true whether you're on a horse or off a horse. That's just our body. So yes. Balance is making sure we're not using excessive muscular energy at the backside, the left side, the right side, the front side, the top side, the bottom side.
So it's constantly checking in. How could you possibly think about anything else?
Right. The good news is our nervous system, our electrical force senses.
Oh, yeah.
It senses whether we need more muscular activity or less.
That's a good point, because I see in people who I help organize just standing. One of the first things I see is they take this huge breath. I mean, that's how internal it is. That's how connected the electrical, the central nervous system is with the breathing apparatus. And it's amazing to me when the person is getting closer and closer to that optimal balance, the whole inner system.
Oh, absolutely. And just like a car, we have air, fluid, and electrical, right? Just a body has an air system intake, which is combustion. We have fluid, which is all of our bodily fluids and circulation. And we have our electrical system, which is our nervous system, our heart, which is measured electrically, mm-hmm. Right? So I wrote this down from, I think it was thephysicsclassroom.com, which has been really helpful reviewing the laws of motion. It is a great, I want to give a shout out to physicsclassroom.com.
And easy to understand.
Very easy
to understand.
So when we think of ourselves as a three-dimensional body, And the horse is going to be the same. There's three planes in the horse's body, and both of these things are in motion with all the far away forces of gravity, magnetics. So I quoted this in, if a body has a net force acting on it, it undergoes accelerated motion in accordance with Newton's second law.
Oh.
Right? If there is no net force acting on a body or forces are balanced, then the body does not accelerate and is in equilibrium. Right? So when we rock, that's acceleration. We're back to Newton's second law. We're generating acceleration, mm-hmm. or the horse rocking us generates acceleration, right? So we're still on this interplay of forces, the action reaction to cope with excessive acceleration of the body. But when we're equalizing all of the forces, that's how we find the stillness of balance. And our body's relationship to gravity is constant, whether we're on a horse or off a horse, which is also always under our control, our conscious awareness, our conscious control in how we use our body. So I thought that was really well put, that two bodies interacting are going to if the net force is generating more acceleration, then we're having to cope with all these directions and magnitudes of forces, right? But as we think of our body and the relationship of our mechanical skeleton with gravity, we start to find a more equalized use of our soft tissues, more equalized use of our joints connecting our bones. So I know in Alexander technique, you use the term like having the joints open and available, having a range of motion that's open and available. If our skeletal relationship to gravity is not accurate, right, then we have to use our joints as well as our soft tissue in a way that just creates instant stability, but doesn't leave them open and available, because they're being used for the job of stability, which is what restricts the motion of the body.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Restricts it. Yeah.
So like if a horse's axial skeleton is unstable, laterally, horizontally, vertically, then the limbs cannot take a long stride. So when we want a longer, prettier, more suspension in the horse through the strides, it's not possible if the muscles and the joints in the horse's body are barely keeping them from falling. Just right. Doing the job of stabilizing and not actually finding, for us, it's a vertical relationship with gravity. For the horse's axial skeleton, it's a horizontal relationship to gravity. So if the front end goes down and forward, the muscles towards the back end do the job of stabilizing the body with too much tension.
So what would that look like, a horse that does that?
Let's take a left-right example, because that's super easier. Common.
Yeah.
So a horse has a spinal function called rotation and lateral bending. Those are two different spinal functions. In rotation, the long dorsal tips of the spine, the spinous processes, are what we feel on the withers. Those are the wither bones, right? But they go all the way down the back under the saddle. So rotation is a twisting function. So in our bodies, if we twist left and right, that's rotation in our spine because we're vertical. So a horizontal horse, when they rotate the spine usually too much, it feels to us like a rolling motion, like the keel of a boat. It's still actually a twisting motion, but it's on a horizontal plane.
Right.
Right. And what's fascinating is when the dorsal tips of the spine, the top part of the bones, when they shift to the left out of center, we feel an upward force as a rider under our right side. So it's the same action, right? If I twist excessively rotating to the left, the right side of my back contracts. And because a horse is on a horizontal plane, we feel it as the horse lifting up our right seat bone, creating lateral bend in the right side of our spine, and pulling us down or lengthening our left side towards gravity. So we mirror the horse if we've learned to move with the horse.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
If we've been told to move with the horse, then we mirror the dysfunction. So the horse contracts on the right side of their back, and we contract on the whole right side of our body at the same time. The crazy part is, if we're told to keep our weight equal on our seat bones as a way of finding balance, then that feels straight to us.
I know. That's the weird part.
Yeah. And that's what bends people's minds when I take a picture of them and show them how crooked they are. Because our weight feels equal if we go crooked when the horse goes crooked. Body weight feels equal on our seat bones, but muscularly we'll feel like we have a very long left leg and maybe lose the left stirrup a lot.
And that's a good one.
And we'll feel like we have a shorter right leg where we can really get our weight in the stirrup. And I've had clients who were told that they had two different length of legs. And I go, if you measure the bones, the bones are not unequal. It's how we're using ourselves.
Perfect. Yeah. And
a lot of people will raise the low stirrup trying to balance the rider. They'll bring up the low stirrup.
I've been taught that.
Absolutely. And for the poor horses, it's also really common to flock saddles asymmetrically. Especially an expensive custom fitted saddle. If the horse has a chronic pattern of this dorsal rotation or this rotation with the dorsal tips to the left back muscles will atrophy and the right back muscles will be constantly contracted. So a saddle fitter comes along with the best of intentions to stabilize the rider. They put extra flocking on the left side of the saddle. Mm. Right, which theoretically the horse could still change because it's just soft flocking, but it puts the rider is still looking for equal weight on the seat bones. So the rider's body weight is still creating the same problem.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, so I want to come back to Newton's third law of motion, but that's sort of the practical application of it. That we're looking for this equal weight distribution, but we don't realize our skeleton is falling too far left. So the whole right side of our body is contracting on the right side. It's pulling our right leg upward. It's possibly creating a right lateral bend and an imbalance, lifting our pelvis high on the right, which then is going to make our shoulder drop on the right. So we'll have uneven shoulders, uneven hips, uneven knees, uneven feet in the stirrups. But we will feel straight because our body weight is literally falling at the exact same rate that the horse is falling.
Because we're getting our center of masses over each other.
Right. And the reason we can do that on a horse because the horse's body can also muscularly contract to remain stable without balance, right? If we did that on a boat, we would fall in the water.
A boat, a balance beam.
A bicycle. It just doesn't work. But the horse can compensate for us with their body. Because of our ability between the relationship of our bones to our soft tissues and how our joints push our bones around, all of those internal forces, according to Newton's third law of motion, will be equal in magnitude, but opposite in direction, right? So that's why the soft tissue kicks in when the bones are losing an ideal relationship to gravity. So it's a lot more effort. And over time, that misuse of our skeleton is what creates arthritis and bony changes and small repetitive damage, which in the horse could be ring bone, side bone, navicular, all of these different chronic lamenesses that are directly related to concussive forces. Right? So that small, even though the body is managing stability and motion, when it's not ideal, you're going to get muscle pain, overuse from the muscle, soreness, you're going to get joint irritation, which will, you know, could make the body more prone to joint damage. And your skeleton is precarious in its relationship to gravity. So one little bit of unexpected force could be the tipping point to falling off.
Yes.
Yeah. And I can always tell by looking at a rider. Riders who bend the lower back too much and tend to ride ahead of vertical, they always fall off a horse over the shoulders or the neck. Horses or people that tend to sit back on their pockets and round the upper back always fall off the left and right sides. So they don't fall off the front end. And so most experienced riders tend to gravitate to be behind vertical because you're going to fall off the side, but you're not going to take a header like a projectile, right?
That must be the brain saying, protect the head, protect the head.
Protect the head, yes, protect the head. Absolutely. But it's funny because if we're out of balance with gravity, as soon as there's more force than we can cope with or an unexpected force, and we're suddenly back to Newton's first law of motion with inertia, the body in motion is going to tend to stay in motion. So if the horse stops or turns suddenly, we're still going, right? And if we tend to sit back too far, then when the horse turns suddenly, the law of inertia throws us off the left and right side, right? If we tend to be ahead of the vertical, if the horse stops suddenly, we tend to become the projectile going off the front of the horse.
I've done that.
Yeah. Yeah. When we're balanced, we actually are sort of poised in that equilibrium that if forces change direction suddenly, you actually end up keeping your seat before you realized what happened. Because when you're balancing through the thought of equalizing forces in order to find a vertical relationship with gravity over the movement of a horse, it's just like a sailor on rough seas. You can just deal with it better. You can cope with the unexpected and the bigger magnitude of force or sudden change of direction, because you're always looking for that equilibrium.
I think that's key, what you said. It's kind of like when I'm working with riders, it's getting to that level of sensing before what happens happens, before it gets to be this big thing.
Yes.
Can we teach ourselves to tune in to those itty bitty little, oh, I gotta move over here. Oh, I gotta move here. Oh, I got, and instead of it being, oh my God, I gotta move way over here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's key, that we start tuning into where we're putting, where the horse is putting us, for one.
There's a fulcrum point. So if we talk about equalizing forces and having this interplay of action reaction internally between sort of muscle use and bone, and equalizing those forces in a three-dimensional body means a left-right plane, a front-back plane, an up-down plane, where those planes intersect. They have to intersect somewhere, right? So they intersect in the human body near our center of mass. But when we talk about the forces of motion or equalizing the forces during motion, we have not just a center of gravity, but we have what's called a point of balance, which is just the axis of those three dimensional planes. So that's the fulcrum of a body in motion. So what you're talking about is when you make an adjustment at the fulcrum, it's easy. It's very small. There's not a lot of force. It's also very subtle. So we have to learn to tune into that subtle point of balance in our bodies and the horse's body. But we can manage internal forces in three directions very quickly and very accurately by working with the axis point. Right? So learning about the point of balance as a force management tool is so efficient because we can equalize forces left, right, front, back, up, down very quickly from the fulcrum point. But once that fulcrum point starts moving, right, that force is exaggerated as it travels a farther distance from the center.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. So we fall off, like we can sort of manage to stay on the back of a horse, and our center can maybe shift, I don't know, 6 inches left or 6 inches right before we physically fall off the horse.
Yeah. So we had maybe the to work in that little 1 to 3 inch place before we get to the 6 inch place.
Or the 1 inch place.
That would be good.
Like bringing it down to sort of imagining this axis of three planes, trying to equalize three planes in a three-dimensional body. We can imagine that axis like a ping pong ball, or even a something, it could be small and heavy. It could be small and light. It could even be, we could start with it as the size of a softball. I mean, it doesn't matter. But as we imagine an intersecting point, it comes down to literally a singular point, like a dot on a piece of paper. But we can kind of imagine it bigger or smaller to feel where our center is in relationship to gravity over a moving horse. Right. So that's a constant adjustment through our skeleton as well as our soft tissue use. Stabilizing just means not falling off. But it doesn't mean that we're in balance, because balance specifically means an equilibrium of forces.
Good point.
So those are two different things.
Yes.
And just because a horse can do a piaf or a pirouette or a flying lead change, it doesn't mean that the forces are equalized. The body will compensate, even at very high level maneuvers. This interplay of forces internally will prevent the horse from falling over, but it might not be an equalized force in all three dimensions, which means there's going to be stress and strain side effects on the body.
And we usually see them as something in the legs. It usually comes down.
It will manifest there because there's more concussive forces when the hoof is hitting the ground, right? So, and again, that comes back to external forces. That frictional force is what propels the horse forward. So the what was that thing you said? Can you read that about the horse's leg internally?
This is from Patrick Johnson at alexandertechniquescience.com. He responded with...
He's a physicist
and an Alexander teacher. So what a great combination. Thank you, Patrick.
Yes.
The force of the ground on the hoof is an external force, and that drives the horse forward. So the internal forces are the muscles pulling on the bones and the bones pushing on each other. All the various ligaments and tendons transmitting forces from one location to another to eventually thrust the horse leg backward. The external force is the frictional force of the ground reacting to the hoof trying to move backward.
Yes.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. Right. So that describes the internal use of forces meeting the external force. So gravity is one force that helps us find equilibrium internally. But when we move, and it's such a weird thing to think about, but Newton's third law of motion, if we start talking about external forces, that leg can't propel the body forward. I think he used the example of all of that internal force can be generated. But if the hoof meets ice,
right, he did say that.
If the hoof meets ice instead of turf, you're not going to have as much forward propulsion because there's not as much frictional force.
Yes.
For the hoof. Right. And that's, again, I just want to touch back to what sparked that was why the horse's concussive forces will manifest in the hoof and the legs first.
Yes.
Right. But the root cause of that imbalanced or excessive concussive force in the lower legs is how the body is balancing and equalizing in all three dimensions.
Yes. Up the spine.
Up high because it's organized by the nervous system.
Right. That's way cool.
Very cool.
I don't know if people understand that because we're always looking at the legs, you know?
Well, and that's exactly, if you're looking at once damage is done,
right?
Vets are trained to come in and relieve pain and fix what's broken, mm-hmm. right? So their job is to look at the horse from the hoof up. As riders with balance, we become actually quite therapeutic for our horse's soundness and health when we think about training the body towards a more optimal function of the axial skeleton, the skull, spine, pelvis, rib cage, and its relationship to gravity during motion. That's what actually changes the concussive forces through the legs.
Yeah. And so that's where both of us, you know, agree completely about our work. You just do it more with horses. I do it more with people, but it's the same thing.
Right. And sometimes a mechanical adjustment, which is just maybe a habit of the use of the body and the nervous system, a mechanical adjustment or changing our force relationship with gravity in three dimensions can alleviate the pain.
Exactly.
It can instantly alleviate pain because you've instantly relieved the force that's creating the pain. Now, if there's already pathology, you might need the vet, medication, therapies, whatever, but to prevent the pathology.
Yes.
And pain is a precursor to pathology.
That's important. Say that again.
Pain is a precursor to the pathology.
And that works with people too.
Absolutely.
Unless you've been hit with a baseball bat.
an accident, an injury. Absolutely. But for a horse, the only way they have to express that there may be a pain issue is by resisting our aids and protecting themselves. So when we look at behavior in a horse, we have to be very careful what we're really looking at. Right. So we can create, there can be a level of discomfort from poor mechanical use or mismanaging the forces over gravity, making them unequal. And that discomfort prolonged can become pain and can become pathology. But horses are fabulous. The second they're uncomfortable, they let you know. They don't do pain, no pain, no gain. It's like they just don't do that, right? But then we label it as bad behavior, disobedient, poor personality traits. And as soon as we label that communication from the horse, we quit looking for the root cause.
That's true.
Our brain shuts down and we go, that horse is just a butthead. That horse is lazy, right? That horse is crazy. That horse has ADD, is so distracted. And I go, really, it's not that complicated. They're just letting us know when they feel unsafe or uncomfortable through their behavior. So it's up to us to learn how to either help them feel safe or in motion, how we and horses manage the forces of motion in relationship to gravity, friction, electricity, magnetic forces, all these kind of farther away forces are always at play as well. We have internal forces, external forces, relationships of forces. And Newton's third law of motion, the, the thing it describes most accurately to me is how we can be stable and yet completely out of balance.
I know.
That is what the third law of motion explains, that I think is very hard for people to wrap their heads around. So when we talk about looking at horse and rider from the inside out, it's, let me review what we've talked about. So Newton's third law of motion, when two objects interact, they apply force to each other of equal magnitude, but in opposite directions. So a pair of anything, all forces come in pairs. A pair of any two objects, we could take a bone and a joint. We could take two bones. We could take a bone and a ligament and a muscle as different objects, right? And that action reaction force is going to be equal in magnitude, but opposite in direction. And this is so important for us to understand in our own bodies, because we think, oh, we're just all going to feel pain as we get old. But if we think about balance in the use of our body and balance in the horse's body, you reduce excessive wear and tear in the muscle and joint by how you align your three-dimensional skeleton with gravity during motion. So it helps us understand how the action-reaction play of forces allows us to go through life, whether we're on a horse or not, allows a horse to be ridden at a low level, medium level, or even a very high level of performance, big jumps, fast races, tight turns, right? All of that is possible while the balance inside the body is not equalized.
Yes.
And that's really where idiopathic lameness comes from, whether it's the human, and idiopathic just means hard to detect where it came from, that it wasn't an obvious, you know, bat across the leg kind of lameness, right? So other than an accident or an injury, which explains injury to the body, idiopathic means, to me, in my mind, it means a small repetitive damage that took hold over time.
Yeah.
From a veterinary perspective, it means we don't know precisely the cause.
And what's always interesting to me, and I don't know if a lot of people grasp this, but our postural muscles are closest to our bones.
Absolutely. That is a big eye opener.
They're not our biceps and the things we see. Those right. are not meant to help us posturally. It's like the multifidus and the rotatories in the back, the peroneals in the lower leg. They're all very deep right next to the bones.
Yeah, I was shocked. And anybody can Google, there's four layers of muscle in the human body. Mm-hmm. That's how they distinguish the inner and outer muscles. And I can't remember if four is the outer or the inner.
I don't remember which way that goes. Okay. I just know that.
But there's layers of muscle with the
layers.
Outer layers of muscle are more for directly related to motion, but the inner layer of muscle that actually is closest to the axial skeletal bones mm-hmm. and even the leg bones, the deepest layer of muscle, is just to keep our relationship with gravity.
Exactly.
And so we overuse the outer muscles, and again, pairs.
Yes.
Pairs. So we can even think of the muscle layer number one as an opposing object or a different object than the outer layer of muscle. So any two objects are going to work with equal magnitude in opposing directions. Mm-hmm. So that law of motion it applies to any force.
Exactly.
And that's all movement is force.
It's managing forces. And that's pretty much what we, you know, that's our big thing, you and me both, is how are we managing these forces, whether it's us, whether it's the horse, the in between the both of us. That's what it's all about.
Right. So what are your kind of top takeaways from talking about this third law of motion and the discussion we just had? How would you recap the most important points?
Some of the early language we talked about, static equilibrium, what that means. What else is key to me is that you can be stable, but not be balanced.
That is key.
That is key. And that is where your work and my work come into play, because people and horses need help with that.
Yeah, that's why you use the term optimal posture and I use the term optimal balance, because it's an optimization of the body mechanics.
Yes.
And which and optimizes the force management into, and I would call balance a kind of a synonym for the term static equilibrium.
Yeah.
But static is a moment to moment.
Right.
Right. It's an adjustable point of a static equilibrium. So once we're in motion, every half of a second, we're balancing, rebalancing, rebalancing, adjusting. It's not.
I think that's really important for people to understand. It's not a static, it's not a place.
It's not a posture, and it's not
a posture.
Riding position.
Yeah.
It's and much more dynamic than that, because we're dealing with physical forces internally, externally, our bodies, the horse's bodies.
Yes. Yeah. That's my takeaway, that those are the, you know, managing the forces, that it's, you can be managing them and still not be balanced.
Yeah. And that's sort of one of my takeaways to recap this. I loved what you said about static equilibrium, remembering that balance is basically equalizing opposing forces. Mm-hmm. Right? That's balance. But now we have three dimensions. We have lots of different objects that are constantly having that relationship internally and externally. Being stable, not falling over or not falling off your horse, does not mean that you have balance.
Key takeaway.
For the horse or the human.
Or the rider. Right? Or the combination of the both.
And how that relates to us in real life is our horse being a butthead and frustrating us. They're yelling at us.
They are screaming.
They are screaming at us that they either don't feel safe and they're about to go into their sympathetic nervous system, so hang on, or they're just not comfortable because they're exerting too much force in one area of the body because the skeleton is out of its ideal relationship with gravity.
Bingo.
Behavior, put it aside. Behavior is communication in the nonverbal world. How else are you going to communicate? Right? They can't send us a text message going, you know, you really need some more riding lessons. You're kind of concentrating all your weight in the stirrup bars and it's hurting my back.
Yeah.
Right? We only know from the result in the body, lameness, pain, and especially chronic or idiopathic. That's a sure sign that we've been stabilizing, but not in balance.
Yes.
Right. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was that quote. I'm going to read it again because I just love it. If a body has a net force acting on it, we can say object instead of body, meaning anything, it undergoes accelerated motion in accordance with Newton's second law. Right? So force always has, basically the second law of motion was force equals mass times acceleration, and force as a vector quality always has direction and magnitude. So anytime there's excessive motion, we have more acceleration, which means more forces, more directions. Mm-hmm. So excessive movement, like if you look at a really great athlete, there's an efficiency in their motion. They're not wasting. They don't look jarring or efforting. Like to watch a really beautiful runner, they just look weightless across the ground, as opposed to me going out jogging and damaging my knees. It's like, so if a body has a net force acting on it, it undergoes accelerated motion in accordance with Newton's second law. If there is no net force acting on a body or forces are balanced, then the body does not accelerate and is in equilibrium. That's a very accurate description of
balance. I like that.
So when a horse is balanced, that's why they're so easy to sit. Mm-hmm. Riding a horse in balance feels like floating, right? When all those forces of motion are equalized in three dimensions, we don't have to learn to sit the trot or struggle to sit the canter. We just can.
Right.
Right? Because the horse's axis point in those three planes is right under the seat of the saddle. And ours is right in our middle, kind of near our belly button. So that axis of a three-dimensional plane, when all the planes are equalized, we feel this incredible stability and ease. So when people say it's hard to sit that horse because it's a big mover or that horse has a bad trot, I go, you're just telling me that the forces are not equalized and the horse right. is not in balance. Because the internal forces of any size horse during any type of movement can be equalized. When they're not equalized, we get a boatload of force in the saddle.
We sure do.
It's hard to ride.
I got one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a big takeaway for me. But anything else you want to add?
Oh, just that managing the forces and stability does not necessarily mean it's balanced.
Right.
Those are the big ones for me.
So forces always come in pairs. For every action, there is always an opposite and equal reaction. That can be internally, externally, contact forces, or what they call action at a distance forces, gravity. And there's so many directions and layers. I go, that's why we can't work with a horse's body parts and we can't really manipulate or control our own body parts. We're going to get it wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's so complex.
It's very, yeah.
Bodies are incredibly complex machines. But what we can feel and sense and actually direct our body towards the best use easily is by thinking in terms of force management.
Yes.
Directions of force, equalizing force, coping with external forces, our relationship to gravity, all of that is about the physics going on rather than the mechanics or the biology.
Yes.
So hopefully that helps some riders out there or some people, maybe even with pain issues in their own knees and ankles and hips, that we could play with how we equalize forces in three dimensions to find a slightly better organization of our body in motion on or off the horse.
Yes.
Yes.
Cool.
So thanks for joining us. Hope it was helpful. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Please comment, like, share, follow, and we will just keep on meeting for these Horse Geeks podcasts. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Be kind.